This is what I'm supposed to be speaking about, but I'm sorry I'm not going to speak about it. But I will be happy to talk about it. I think it's a really important problem. It's something I do think about, and about Byzantine Agreement and blockchain and decentralized decision making. But I'm going to talk about something a little bit more well defined. So this is a talk for a general audience. So all right. So this is the talk on the challenge of broadcast, or how many messages does it take to build a phone tree? And I'm from Victoria, which is on Vancouver Island, as opposed to Vancouver, which is not on Vancouver Island. Okay. So the broadcast problem is you'd like everyone to know something. Suppose you know your friends, but maybe not your friends' friends. So you have some kind of social network where you have a link to your friends and everybody has a link to their friends. And you would like to spread some message. So you tell your friends about it, and your friends tell their friends about it, and on and on. And that's called flooding. And that's basically how you can do that. Now, the thing about flooding is that many calls are redundant. So, for example, here, you know, A might tell C and D about something, and then C will tell D, but D already knows. And C will tell J, but D already told J. So, so instead, what you do, what my parents used to do before Facebook, is they'd build a phone tree. A phone tree, it's a tree, so that you only have to pass N minus one messages, where N is the number of people. And, okay. So the question is whether you can build a phone tree with a number of messages that's proportional to the number of people, as opposed to the number of links or edges. And we call that a spanning tree, but this is for a general audience. So I'm sure many of you know what that is. But it's a fundamental block of distributed computing, and it's used to distribute information from a source. It's also used to gather information from the leaves up to a source, or to elect a leader, or for many other purposes. So a phone tree is built when the people know who they're supposed to call, and maybe who's calling them to. So flooding can be used to build a phone tree. And that would require M messages, where M is the number of people in the the number of links in the social network. So what would happen is that somebody would the source would call all their friends, and the first person to hear from a message from somebody would set that person to be their parent in the tree. And that's how the tree would get established. So the first person you hear from becomes your parent, and from then on, and you tell them they're your parent, and then from then on they send to you, and they don't send to other people who don't tell them that they're the parent. And this is an asynchronous process. Asynchronous meaning, which by now you probably all know, but asynchronous meaning that there's no time, there doesn't need to be any universal clock. You just wait till you hear from somebody, then you respond. So that's an asynchronous process. And how long does it take? Well, basically it takes the time needed to reach the last person, you know, to go from one end of the graph down to the bottom. So D, where D is the distance from the source to the person furthest away from the source. Okay. So I hope the most general person here understands what I'm talking about. Good, thank you. All right. Now there is this folk theorem. It's been called a folk theorem. It was described in 1990. I'm putting it in my own words. If a person knows only who their friends are, but not their friends' friends, then flooding is the best that can be done to build a phone tree. So what I'm going to talk about for the next 15 minutes or so is the continuing challenge of this problem. And a simpler problem to think about, if you want to take it home, it's very simple to state. And a surprising new graph sampling lemma that just came out of this. All right, so we have our social network, which we now will switch to calling a graph. We have people who we'll now call nodes, and friendship links, which we'll now call edges. We'll say edges are incidents in the nodes that they link. And the nodes are connected if there's a path from one to the other in the graph. And we assume the messages are short. They're long enough to hold the name of a node. We'll say that a set of mutually connected nodes is called a component. So if you see that line drawn around A, D, C, and H, in this particular social network or graph, this is a component. They can't reach outside the component. And I'm using tilde to mean tilde some function of x, meaning that it grows proportional to f of x as x increases. We usually say big O notation, but a general audience doesn't know that, maybe. All right. So the set of edges leaving a component, that is with one endpoint in the component, the red edges that I put here, that's called the cut set induced by the component. Okay, I think that's all the technical now terms you'll need, I think, I hope, for this talk. Unless maybe the next slide, let's see. No, all right. So here's what we know about this problem. We know that if you have a global clock, if it's considered a synchronous as opposed to an asynchronous system, then actually n log n, these short messages, suffice using what's called a randomized sketching technique. And that was only discovered in 2015. And in fact, there's even a method that works in this kind of asynchronous system that uses n to the 3/2 messages. So it could be better than the total number of links, if the number of links is pretty large. I mean, the number of links between n people could be as big as, you know, order n squared. And the time of these methods is proportional to n rather than what we would hope for, which is d, the longest distance in the graph. D could be less than n, it could be equal to n. And we know one thing about a trade-off. We know that it is possible to do this with in the synchronous model, it is possible to do it in n to the 3/2 messages in something that is usually around d time for large enough d.
Probabilistic.
Excuse me?
Probabilistic.
Ah, so all of these techniques are randomized. And all of them are Monte Carlo, meaning that's a term we mean to say that they might not work with some probability, low probability they might not work. Okay. We don't know if there is a deterministic algorithm which can build the tree in fewer than m messages, the number of links. We don't know if there's a deterministic algorithm to do that. We don't know if there's an asynchronous algorithm that will run with better than n to the 3/2 messages. We don't know if there's an algorithm that will use the optimal number of messages, which is n, because you have to send a message to everybody, and with optimal time, say d, the length of the longest path from the source to the furthest end of the graph. So these are still mysteries to us. Okay, so what happens when we don't understand the problem? We go to a simpler problem. So what I'm going to describe is extremely recent work. In fact, I don't think you'll find it online yet. With Jacob Holm, Michael Thorup, Or Zamir, and Uri Zwick. Okay, so we have n nodes and m edges. Okay, so here's an extremely simple problem. You can take it home, you can remember it easily. You have a referee, and you have a graph. Each node gets to send one message to the referee with B bits. There's no other communication. The referee has to, I left it out, the referee has to figure out what the phone tree is. How large does B have to be? Now, this is called the one-way communication model. You can do this deterministically. Simple solution. Every node sends all its neighbors to the referee, and the referee can reconstruct the whole social network and figure out a phone tree. And in fact, if you think about it for a few more minutes, you can do it with n over 2 bits, because, you know, after all, each edge has two endpoints, and they both, you don't need the redundancy that would be provided by both endpoints sending that edge. So if you divided up the edges among all the nodes, and you had a, you know, prearrangement as to how you would do that division, then each node could send n over 2 bits. Okay, now, there is another method, and some of you may be aware of it. If every node knows the same log n random bits, then there is a method, a Monte Carlo method, such that log n to the third bits suffice with high probability. And in fact, we know now, just recently, that you actually need that many bits to get that. But, you know, in this one-way communication model, there's no way for the, how do the nodes find the same random bits? How do they, we can't assume they have the same random bits. That's called the global random string model. But we're not assuming you have a global random string. Okay, so what if you don't have a global random string? All right, so let me just define something for you. One more definition. You can write an edge, the name of an edge, as a binary vector. And then you could take the bitwise XOR of two or more edges. What is that? What do I mean by that? I mean, if you write down the two names, say the first name is 001010, and you write down the other edge name 010100, and you set the XOR of those two names, is you look at each bit, and if there's an odd number of ones, you set it to 1. If there's an even number of ones, you set it to 0. Or 0, you know, all zeros, you set it to 0. So that's the XOR, the bitwise XOR of those two strings. All right, so what's so great about the XOR model? If you consider this XOR method, consider the multi-set of edges formed by including the edges incident to every node in the component. If an edge has two endpoints in the component, then it's incident to two nodes. So the multiset would have two copies. If the edge only has one endpoint in the component, then a node in that, there's only one node that's going to be incident to that edge. There's only one copy in that multiset. If you take the XOR of all those names according to each of the individual nodes, you're going to end up just with the XOR of the names of the edges that appear with one endpoint in the set. Okay? So that's just a sort of elementary fact. And I heard it goes back to the 1600s, but I don't know if that's true. Okay. So now we can represent the names of edges as bit vectors using square root n log n bits, so that the bitwise XOR of any subset of no more than square root n edge names is unique. Okay, so I'm telling you that we can encode the any set of edges in a certain way so that no matter how you XOR any subset of square root n of them, you get a different number. So in other words, knowing this encoding, you can go backwards, looking at the XOR, you know exactly what that subset is, what that subset of edges is. And this code is very trivial. I mean, you can just start building it. You know, put one in. If you get a subset, don't use the next number. Then put one in. You get a subset, check. With all the subsets you eliminate, you don't make that a name. And so you can easily generate this code. OK. So this, time goes fast. So this gives an algorithm with private randomness. Each node sends a random sample of square root n of its edges, or all of its edges, if its degree is less than square root n. And it sends the bitwise XOR of the encodings of all its incident edges. So if G is the original graph, the referee uses the random sample of edges to construct the spanning trees of the sample's connected components. And then it uses the XORs sent by the nodes to figure out the edges in between the components. And now it has all the information it needs to build a spanning forest. Now we call those edges, the edges between components, we'll call them intercomponent edges. We made up the name, intercomponent edges, with respect to this sampled graph. All right, now this works only if the number of edges out of each component is less than square root n, or less than or equal to square root n. If it isn't, this coding method is not going to return, it's going to return gibberish. We're not going to know what this code means. We're not going to be able to convert it to a set of edges. But in fact, when we tried to prove this, it wasn't easy to get it down to square root n. It seemed to be a need for a log n extra factor. So instead, we found something more surprising, and this is why I'm here today to tell you about this. So before I can tell you what we found, I just want to define for you a random k-out subgraph. Okay, so how do you get a random k-out subgraph? Each node, if its degree is greater than k, it picks random k edges incident to it. Otherwise, all its incident edges are picked. And that edges in the subgraph if it's selected by at least one of its endpoints. Okay, that's how we define a k-out subgraph. Now, in fact, we had rediscovered, we didn't make up his name, we discovered that someone else had been talking about this before, about, 90 years ago. So 90 years ago, Stanisław Ulam was sitting in a cafe in Poland, and he was working with Banach on the in the Scottish writing problems. These mathematicians would gather in the local cafe, which was called the Scottish Cafe, and they would write math problems. And here was a problem that Ulam proposed. He said, and you know, he didn't have computer networks. In fact, he was thinking about friendship networks. He said, suppose we have n people. This is exactly the quote translated, I guess. To each element, we attach k others among the given n at random. These are the friends of the given person. What is the probability that from every element, one can get to every other element through a chain of mutual friends? And this problem was studied later by Alan Fries and others. The difference, though, is that they weren't talking about random subgraphs of arbitrary graphs. They were talking about random subgraphs generated from the complete graph. Just randomly pick k guys. Okay, so here's our theorem. Let g prime be a random k-out subgraph of any graph g. For k at least log n, and we think we can get it down to log n, the expected number of intercomponent edges of g with respect to components of g prime is proportional to n over k. So for example, if k is equal to square root n, then we would expect that the total number of interconnected components, even with many edges between any pair of components, is no more than a square root n, which is quite surprising to me and to us. All right, and in fact, this is the best possible. So I just want to say a few more minutes do I have a few more minutes? All right, a few more minutes about this. So here's an example. If you have n over 2 nodes that are completely connected to each other, a clique, n over 2 nodes on the other side, but there are n over k nodes that have edges across to the other side. If you if every node picks k neighbors at random, they're not likely, actually, there's a constant probability that none of the edges in the middle will be picked. In which case, you see, we'll have n over k interconnecting, intercomponent edges. So this is an example of where you actually get that worst case of n over k interconnecting, intercomponent edges. And this method of sampling, we don't use very much. I mean, we graph algorithms people don't use very much. I mean, we haven't seen it. It's not good. I mean, it's much better compared to what we normally do, which is to sample every edge with probability p. And here's an example. So if you had the graph with n over 2 nodes all connected and a bunch of little cliques, that's little small connected components where they're connected to all the other nodes in these little groups, the KL model will pick KN edges, and there will be n over k expected intercomponent edges by our theorem. But if you sampled them with probability p, if you sampled the edges with probability p, you'd have to pick p big enough to get the same, I mean, to compare results, you pick p so that you get the same number of edges in the subgraph, you'd have to pick p to be equal to about 8k over n to get the, sorry, yeah, 8. P equal to kn divided by m, because you multiply p times the total number of edges to get the expected number of edges. And when you do this, go through these simple calculations, you'll see that there's a constant number of the edges of the nodes in the small cliques will be isolated nodes. That means all their edges will be intercomponent edges. And that will give you n squared over k intercomponent edges, roughly speaking. So it's a lot worse. You'll have a lot more interconnected, intercomponent edges. Okay, now I have only a minute. I'm just going to say a minute about an application we found. It gives a very simple method for finding the phone tree or the spanning tree in a large graph if you're using massively parallel computing systems like MapReduce or Hadoop. And I guess if you have machines which can store kn edges, and say k could be as small, maybe if our theorem's right, it could be as small as log n, then it leads to a very simple four-round algorithm. All right, so I think I'll stop there. So I just want to conclude. Building a spanning tree in a distributed network efficiently is still not, this small problem, fundamental problem, is still not fully understood. And 2, research on fundamental problems can lead to new techniques and surprisingly new insights. Thank you.